So to start, today we're going to be talking about tax reform and some of the tax proposals that are on the table, both from the administration's perspective as well as from Congress. And before we get into that, I have to get on my soapbox and talk about what tax reform is and what tax reform isn't and why I don't think any of it's going to happen. More importantly, I would like to talk about how we can advise our clients in light of the dearth of guidance that we're getting from Congress, in light of the changes that may not happen this year. What are some of the things that we can do both on the income tax planning and estate planning side that we should be advising our clients to take advantage of while these things still exist? You know, it's like a broken record. The Obama administration, since they came into power, have been asking for certain changes in the tax code, and those changes seem to be repeating themselves every year. We'll go over some of them today, particularly on the estate and gift side and generation skipping transfer tax side. But in the Congress, there has been a voice that has started to be heard, and that is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, Representative Camp from Michigan, who's a Republican, has been actively lobbying for tax reform. Why? What is tax reform? Anybody? Anybody have any clues as to what tax reform is?
A change from what it is now.
A change from what it is now. That's an accurate statement.
Yeah.
What is the goal of tax reform?
Simplification.
Simplification. That's a synonym, I think, that people are using for tax reform, because the Internal Revenue Code is so complicated. It is so big. Along with the regulations and the Internal Revenue Manual, IRM I refer to it, that helps the IRS enforce those laws. And then we've got rulings, private rulings, general counsel memoranda from the IRS, and then all the cases interpreting all these laws, which are millions of pages of text. It's out of control. So everybody's saying, we've got to get control of
it.
I remember doing tax returns by hand. And sending them off to computer processing centers in Dallas, Texas later on. And then now we can do it on our desktop, right? Using TurboTax. So it shouldn't be that bad, but it is. Most of us have to pay a professional to help us prepare our tax returns. So tax reform, one of the synonyms for tax reform is simplification, making it more simple. But if you start digging into some of the tax reform proposals, you realize that, is it really making things more simple? Another synonym for tax reform is rate reduction and base broadening, which may not equal simplification. Rate reduction on the individual side, rate reduction on the corporate side of taxation, and broadening the base, meaning that more people would be included in the tax system, there would be less deductions and less credits available for people as a result of broadening the base, lowering the rates. Tax reform means a lot of things to a lot of different people. In my professional life since 1980, I've seen, I think, two major tax reform changes. President Reagan initiated a tax reform movement in 1984. He said, the tax code is too complicated. When I began practicing law, and I was already practicing as a CPA at the time, the tax code was complex, and we had a situation where the Democrats actually were able to talk to the Republicans. So on the Democratic side, you had people like Dan Rostenkowski, who was head of the House Ways and Means Committee, who was a Democrat from Chicago. One of those old line Democrats. He ended up doing some bad things, went to jail, and is out now. Then we had Senator Bob Packwood on the Senate side, who was head of the Senate Finance Committee, who was, again, these were moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans, fiscal conservatives, reasonably, who were able to talk to each other, work with the administration, the president, and after 2 years of hard work, it took 2 years, they enacted the Tax Reform Act of 1986. But those were very different times. We didn't have the massive budget deficits that we have today. We had deficits, but nothing near in the range that we have today. So we're dealing with a situation where we have a massive budget deficit that didn't exist back in 1986 when we did do the Tax Reform Act of 1986. We also had bipartisanship. People were able to talk to each other. There was no such thing as the Tea Party or the right-wing Republicans or the ultra-left-wing Democrats. They may have existed, but they didn't drive the creation of tax legislation and legislation at the time. Today, we have a very fractionated House of Representatives and a very fractionated Senate. And that's not good for the country. That's my political soapbox. Another major tax reform effort really was a budget reform effort that President Clinton led in 1993, the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1993. It was the first time in decades that the U.S. was able to balance its budget through a combination of tax increases and spending cuts, because one can't go without the other. In the Reagan administration, you had the Office of Management and Budget Director David Stockman, who said, we can decrease taxes and increase spending and still balance the budget. Didn't work. Supply-side economics didn't work. So Clinton, who was a master of compromise, was able to, again, once again, bring the Republicans and the Democrats together to reach a compromise. One of the major changes that they made in that tax bill was they did away with the whole concept of treating capital gains differently than ordinary income. Of course, they kept all those provisions in the Internal Revenue Code, which made it convenient when we had to lower capital gains rates later on in the late 1990s, which happened. Since I've been practicing since 1980, there has been a major tax bill of one sort or another every year. So as a tax lawyer and as a tax accountant, I'll be gainfully employed the rest of my life. That's not necessarily a good thing. And the goal of tax reform is to try to make things simpler, to try to make things easier on the consumer, and to try to make it easier to enforce. But as you're going to see today, and as we're going to dig into some of the tax reform proposals that may come into play, it's not likely that true simplification will ever be achieved, at least in the near term. We're dealing with a massive deficit. What is contributing to that deficit? Anybody? Thank you. The word that was used was entitlements. What are entitlements? Social Security. Medicare. Medicaid. Those three things comprise our entitlement system today. Neither the Republicans nor the Democrats have had the gumption, the guts, the courage to stand up and say, you know what, we first need to get control of the deficit before we can really start tackling tax reform and tax simplification. Senator Reid, who is the Democratic leader of the Senate, has basically said, I'm not willing to talk about tax reform unless there's going to be significant revenue increases. But the idea is that tax reform is supposed to be a balanced affair. At least that's what it was in 1986. Any revenue increases were were offset by revenue decreases. Any revenue decreases, any cuts in the tax code were offset by revenue increases. So we've got a disconnect there. And the goal would be to try to balance out any offsets to the budget, any decreases in revenue or any increases in the budget deficit by an offsetting revenue increase, a tax increase. That would be the goal of tax reform as we know it. But we've already got the Senate Majority Leader saying that he's not willing to consider it without revenue increases. And I think it's a logical statement to make because we're dealing with these deficits, with these entitlements. The entitlements plus the interest on the national debt comprise nearly 50% of our gross domestic product. Since World War II, that has not occurred. And now, in the last two or three years, we're seeing a repetition of that. How do you deal with tax reform? Cutting taxes, cutting tax rates, or even keeping a balanced tax reform playing field without dealing with the deficit? People are kicking the can down the road. At some point, we're going to come to the end of the road and there's going to be a cliff. And the can is going to fall off the cliff. And I hope the rest of us don't fall off with it. Somebody has to have the courage to deal with entitlements. So in your voting, when you're considering who to vote for in the next election, if there's nobody that's talking about cutting entitlements or cutting the deficit, then do we really have the most important issues being dealt with? Okay, off the political soapbox. I think it's critical to our nation's future and to our children's future. I have four kids. Someday I'll have grandkids. Many of you may already have grandkids. How do we deal with their futures? Ross Perot was one of the first people that really stood up and said it. Now, he wasn't really an electable character. He was kind of a funny guy to put out there in front of the other candidates that were running. I think Clinton was running at the time. But he's the guy that came up with the idea of the giant sucking sound, the deficit. Remember that giant sucking sound? And he had his charts, and during the debates, it was fascinating to me that, you know, a guy who's really an engineer by training, but a businessman, you know, by nature, was able to put it so succinctly. And we're still dealing with that over 20 years later. Somebody needs to have the courage to deal with that. With that in mind, we do have a push for tax reform going on right now.